Because she did not look behind, September did not see the smoky glass casket close itself primly up again. She did not see it bend in half until it cracked, and death hopped up again, quite well, quite awake, and quite small once more. She certainly did not see death stand on her tiptoes and blow a kiss after her, a kiss that rushed through all the frosted leaves of the autumnal forest, but could not quite catch a child running as fast as she could. As all mothers know, children travel faster than kisses. The speed of kisses is, in fact, what Dr. Fallow would call a cosmic constant. The speed of children has no limits. My name is Swan, and I'm blowing you kisses from the basement of the Velo Bike Shop, and you're listening to Ink and Worm, All Things Reading and Writing. And my guests today, I have two out of three here. So Dean. Dean is a Brooklyn-based poet and musician. Hi, Dean.
Hey, what's going on? What up?
You don't get to talk yet. Let's try again. Hi, Dean. How's it going?
Hey, how you doing? Word up.
There you are.
Can you hear me?
There you are. Hi. You're not feeling well. Thank you for journeying despite illness, which is...
Across the train and bus oceans.
Usually a reason why I cancel things. I'm like, I don't feel well.
I wouldn't miss this show, though. I already missed it once.
Yeah. It all worked out, though, I think. And then I have Nasa in the studio again. Hi, Nasa.
Hello.
Nasa's going to be my co-host. This is like the grand announcement. I've been like, I have a co-host and you've heard her before, but this is who she is. And
hi.
I'm so excited.
I hope you are, too.
Yeah. Everyone. Why wouldn't they be? We also have someone else on their way, but they... Well, if they decide to tell the story, I'll tell it. I'll let them tell it anyway. So, happy Mother's Day as well. Today is a day to at least reflect upon the people who have birthed you and shaped you. And, I was thinking this morning, I was wondering what was my favorite fictional mother? Because why not? And so I'm going to pose the question to you guys as well. Favorite fictional mother? Do you have someone that comes to mind?
My mind is a little scattered right now, but what just came to mind was, that there was this TV show in the 90s with these dinosaur puppets, and it was like called Dinosaurs
show.
Or something.
Yeah.
And there was a mother in there. It just came to mind.
The dinosaur mother.
Yeah.
Awesome. That's hilarious because I have seen that, and not extensively, but I totally...
A throwback.
I know what you're talking about. Dinosaurs. That's insane. Yeah. How about you, Nisa?
Mine is an odd one, but go with me. It is the evil witch from Rapunzel.
Oh, we've talked about this.
Yeah.
Please explain.
Okay, so...
I'll go with you.
Yes, thank you. So my theory behind the evil witch is that... and Stephen Sondheim explores this further in Into the Woods, but is that she takes this child away from what are ostensibly bad parents, because the mother, when pregnant with her, is like, husband, go steal from the evil witch's garden. Twice she makes him do this.
Twice.
And so she takes the baby and raises her in a loving and caring fashion until she hits puberty. And then at puberty, she locks her up, at least in the story that I've heard. And it's to keep her hidden from all the evils of the world. And in my mind, that's just a parent, first of all, suffering from like traumatic PTSD from her own preteen years, but then also just trying to protect and keep the innocence of her child.
Right.
Yeah.
It makes me think of this quote. A meditator was like talking about opening your heart and about how meditation does that. But then they were like, if you want to open your heart, have a child, because they will break your heart and it will have to heal so many times that your heart will eventually be open in a way that is inaccessible in any other way. And I thought that was so beautiful. My favorite fictional mother goes right along with this. Morticia Addams from the Addams Family.
Wait, she was the best mom, though.
She was the best mom. Yeah, fierce. Hands down. So that was who came to mind for me. So thanks for participating. I'm also doing recently a new thing where we're doing a free write. So Nasa has paper. Do you have a pen?
I think I do in here.
Do you have
yeah.
paper?
Ooh,
I have this book, yeah.
So also, while we're doing this, if you're listening in, please figure out some paper and pencil situation. If you don't have, there's this voice recording option on your phone. You can just like talk to yourself and your phone will record it. That's fun to do sometimes. But I'm becoming more of a fan of like a really short free write. So that's what we're doing right now. It might be awful. It might be awesome. Just never know. And we're going to do a poem by E.E. Cummings. Familiar?
Sure.
Love him. It's called Ingest, and it's a little bit shorter, so I'll read through it twice. And instructions to you is you're just going to grab the word, phrase, concept, anything that stands out to you, that's your starting point, and then you just go pen in the page, 5 minutes. Cool?
Okay.
Ooh. Cool. I'm springing this on you guys. You guys are such accommodating guests. Ingest, spring, when the world is mud luscious, and the little lame balloon man whistles far, and we, and Eddie and Bill come running from the marbles and piracies, and it's spring. When the world is puddle wonderful, the queer old balloon man whistles far, and we, and Belly and Isabel come dancing from hopscotch and jump rope, and it's spring, and the goat-footed balloon man whistles far, and we. Read it one more time. And you can also just be like, nothing's speaking to me. I'm going to write about moms or something. That's cool, too. Ingest by E.E. Cummings. Ingest, spring, when the world is mud luscious. The little lame balloon man whistles far, and we. And Eddie and Bill come running from the marbles and piracies. And it's spring, when the world was puddle wonderful. The queer old balloon man whistles far, and we. And Betty and Isabel come dancing from hopscotch and jump rope, and it's spring, and the goat-footed balloon man whistles far, and we. 5 minute free write. If you've just tuned in, we're doing a free write. If you're writing, keep writing. If you find yourself getting stopped, try revisiting that first line or the first idea that came to you. Wrap up what you're writing. Finishing up that last line, those last words. And as we were writing, our guest came in. Hi, Ariel. It's Ariel?
Hello. Yes, Ariel.
Ariel, let me introduce you since people are going to hear your voice now. And welcome. And sorry, by the way, do you want to talk about why you're late? I didn't say anything because I felt like that was like your business.
Well, I was riding my bicycle here. It's a beautiful sunny day.
So pretty.
For once. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And along, I was riding down the Willoughby bike lane, and the New York City Police Department felt it necessary to protect me, or rather to protect other people from my endless and daring and law-breaking red light running. And
wait. If you stop, it's okay to go through, right?
Well, no.
It's not?
No.
Oh, everyone does it. Yeah. Well, some people don't even stop. That scares me.
I know. And as the officer...
Never stop.
You never stop?
No.
You're one of the...
But that was noble of you to rush over here like that.
Yeah, well, I peeked and it was clear, and so I went, because worse than waiting at a red light even is being in the way when a car decides it wants to go first. Mm-hmm. And so the officer
There's a lot of rage on the road.
There is
bikers,
a lot.
Bikers and car drivers alike.
Everyone. And the officer really made a point of letting me know that because it was Mother's Day, rather than giving me the tickets for both of the red lights I ran, he would just give me one ticket for failing to obey a traffic instruction.
Strange. Well, so, New Yorkers, beware. Apparently, Brooklyn police officers are going to catch you if they can. Ariel, are you a performer?
I am a performer.
And a media maker?
I am a media maker.
And an all-around nice guy?
I hope to be.
Great.
Hello.
Hello. So we just did a free write, and part of this practice is being willing to read what you wrote. Would either of you guys be willing to read what you wrote?
Sure.
Wonderful. Dean.
All right, so it goes like, mud gushes us in separate directions, puddles rushing spring in greedy cloud spurts, new seasons erected in confused stages, we shiver in the summer of our anticipation, cascading down the pages like refugees on foreign pavements, the heart made us impatient, bloodthirsty for crumbs of moments we're waiting for, and it happened before so many times ago, but somehow this feels new. Risen, renewed like our ancient moon as it looks down on us.
Thank you.
Word up.
Word up. Nasa?
Yeah.
Any inclination? Also, you don't have to. There's no pressure.
It's kind of long, and it's also a story, and I'm sorry.
That's okay.
I love a story. All
right. Yeah.
A flower burst through the dirt, beginning its life, its still journey. Oh, right. It's still journey. Got you, Nasa. It is green and small and can only see a little light. Clouds begin to cover the sky. Rain falls, making the dirt around it turn to mud. The flower loves the slimy texture, the roughness now so smooth. Rain stops and worms begin to move through, taking and passing nutrients, feeding the plant as it... Sorry, my handmanship
is... It's common.
As it slithers. Oh, my goodness. The plant grows stronger. It begins changing. Colors appear where they weren't before. Limbs begin to expand. The cool earth is further away, but the plant can feel the sun's warmth and basks in it. It is surrounded by other plants, so many colors and species it has never seen before, and that is where I had to stop.
Thank you so much. Cool. My turn. I used to wonder if I was a pirate in another life. I go by the name Swan, which is certainly a good pirate name. However, I'm not predisposed to thievery or violence. I suppose I could hold my own, but I'm not really into instigating or initiating. I would love sailing, I can imagine, although nothing but water for days could get lonely. I would need some good friends to do pirate things with me, and we could spend our lives having grand adventures until we died. Peter Pan, who was not a pirate, but said something about piracy, said to die would be a great adventure. So that's my
thing. Awesome.
Yeah. Awesome.
Cool. And then we also were doing a thing to celebrate Mother's Day. We were thinking about favorite fictional mothers. Do you have anyone that comes to mind when you think about, like, fictional mothers?
Oh, wow. gosh, no. It's the two things I think of, how's that, are one... Anne Sexton, which I know is sort of a terrible mother icon. Her daughter wrote one of the most heartbreaking memoirs I've ever read about growing up as Anne Sexton's daughter. And it was almost a biography. I don't remember. I think it was cast as her memoir, not a biography of Anne Sexton. But it has always stuck with me. It was just, she went for it. And I think with any mother situation like that, where you can imagine Anne Sexton was not necessarily the most stable mother, right? She was a drinker and depressed and had all of these problems. But she just went for it, and she could have taken a pass. And I think that her choice to go for it made it a really honest book about what it is to have a mother with mental health problems. And then the other mother I think of is my friend Sassafras Lowry's book. It's this book called Lost Boy, which I kind of think I'm thinking of because you mentioned pirates and Peter Pan. It's this really gorgeous book about sort of queer punks without families or without broken from their families of origin in Portland. And it's gorgeous. And
when it was set? Like what?
I want to say the early '00s or the late '90s, and Z wrote this, really just took the myth of Peter Pan, blew it up in the most gorgeous way, and it's about, in some ways, reckoning with what happens when Wendy Darling, this also lost punk of her own, sort of falls into this tribe of lost boys and what it does to the chosen family and how to have chosen family and what is it to have a mommy or a daddy or be a boy, and it's just beautiful. It's one of, she's, Z, I'm so sorry, Sassafras in the ether. Z's up for a Lammy, which is the Lambda Literary Award. And it's just gorgeous. I wish I knew anything else to say.
Yeah, thank you for sharing. I'm going to have to check that out. So our featured guest is Dean, who is a poet. And a couple months ago, you were traveling for a couple different...
Yeah, I've done,
like,
poetry
slam type things.
Yeah, well, I was in Nashville visiting family, but I also was performing down there. I did also a few shows here in New York, you know, and I try to do, whenever I go anywhere, just hit up open mics and stuff like that. So I used to do slams a lot. I'm more into just, like, kind of low-key events nowadays, you know, because I think it's more about, you know, when you go to a smaller event, it's more intimate, you know, and you can come across without having to be all hype. I think sometimes it's a little bit, there's a pressure to be animated in some of those events. Mm-hmm. But so, like, when I perform, I usually perform with musicians. Sometimes I'll have, like, a violinist play. There was an event I did in February in the Bowery, and it was just this open mic event. But, you know, we had, like, 15 minutes, so I just would repurpose some of my poetry to kind of improvise with musicians. That's what I've been trying to do the last few months.
Give us a brief history of how you came into this.
Yeah, so my name's Dean Andrews, but I go by Word Up Poet. Like, that's, like, my pen name.
This is a good pin name, by the way. You're the only you.
Yeah, so you can find me on Instagram, wordup.poet, you know, and all
and
those
other...
And
you do Snapchat?
I do Snapchat, so I've been snapping a little bit just now.
That's one I haven't gotten into, but...
Yeah, so all my URLs are wordup.poet. Basically, the name comes from, basically, I was going to open mics, and there was this regular... I grew up in New York, but I lived in Tennessee for several years. And back when I was in college, I was going to Middle Tennessee State. But in the summertime, I was living in Nashville, going to these open mics. And I became a regular, started hosting one. One day, the venue shut down that day. But I had already started promoting for these open mics. And so I had like 15 people that came to the venue and they couldn't perform. But it was nice out in Nashville. We have this park called Centennial Park. It is a big full-size replica of the Parthenon, like the one in Greece. And so it was a nice day. Yeah. It was like the middle of the summer. Yeah.
That's cool.
So I had an idea. Let's go to the steps of the Parthenon and perform some poetry there.
Have you been to the one in Greece?
No, I haven't.
Seems like a good, like, let me...
pilgrimage. Yeah. Soon, definitely.
Of sorts.
And you know...
And I'm also curious, do you know why that happened?
Why what happened?
Why they decided to build... A replica
In Nashville?
Yeah.
I don't know. It was like the turn of the century of Centennial Park, so like 1900s. And Nashville at that time was known as like the Rome of the South or something. There's a lot of like Greek Revival type structures there. So
it's just crazy.
Funny enough.
It's a really
amazing structure. So it feels like you're going back in time because the real Parthenon is destroyed.
Yeah.
And so when you go
I've been to the real one, but not the replica.
So you need to go. You'll love it. And so it feels like you're like Socrates on the Agora. Like they have these platforms. It's built for oration. So when you stand in between the columns, you can hear the echo is insane. Like you stand on this giant steps in between giant columns and then perform in front of a bunch of people. Basically,
is that where were you like standing there as a kid and you're like talking and you're like, oh God, I'm going to be a poet. Because...
No. I was nervous going to these open mics I was going every week, and the main host got sick one day, and he was like, because he knew me and had my number, he's like, can you host a show? I remember the first time I went up, I was like stuttering, you know, and then, so by the time, you know, do it a few times though, and then it's not that big of a deal, you know?
Yeah, you got to do what scares you.
But so that wasn't my show, but then this thing happened at the Parthenon, and then we decided to just do that every week that summer.
Oh, wow.
And I called it Word Up, and basically became a regular thing. We got regulars involved, and then I ended up having like a crew of poets and then musicians that would just come all the time. And then people would just organically, it was Nashville, people have like guitars with them and they're just passing by in the park and then jump up and perform. Mm-hmm. We'd do it for like 5 hours, like a variety show. And then I took it to different venues
really
and grew.
Cool.
It's called Word Up Poetry Collective, you know? And then when I moved back to New York, I kind of went on hiatus for a long time.
I kind of caught you as you're coming back into it.
Yeah, and so this last year I've been kind of reconnecting with it, writing a lot, and... So, and I'm still in touch with the people in Tennessee. They still operate under Word Up Collective. I started a student organization at my university with that.
That's
as
so
well.
Funny because I did have I Googled you and I had a couple of hits come up and I was like, oh, that's weird. That's not you, but
it's like 10 years ago.
Yeah.
It was, you know, but I've done a lot of things with that. You know, we've booked shows in lots of different venues. I've had the honor to perform in front of like Saul Williams, who is my literary poetry kind of like god. You know,
totally.
So like he came to our university and because we were a poetry club on campus, basically they let us host the show. We hung out with him backstage.
What?
At the time, that was like my dream, you know. So we did that and then we would perform before other people on camp that came, like GZA from the Wu-Tang Clan. We hosted that show because like basically my thing was like revolved around like I wrote down a lot of things because you said, you know, the show's about like our influences as writers. Like when I... Coming up, I used to read a lot of poetry, like older poetry. I'm really inspired by like Shakespeare and Lord Byron and stuff like that. But, you know, my inspiration's all over the place. And I like, you know, old style, you know, formulaic poetry. But I kind of fell into the open mic spoken word slam scene. Mm-hmm. But it was always at the time before that, before I got into poetry, I was in a hardcore punk band, you know. And so like so I have all these different influences and backgrounds.
Strange.
And
so who influenced your punk music? I'm curious.
Well, I was so before I moved to Tennessee, I lived in Brooklyn in South Brooklyn, grew up in Coney Island.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, when we were in like middle school, right before 9/11, the year 2000, there was a really big revival punk scene in New York around the Lower East Side, like all around Brooklyn too, is like street core, street punk. Some of the bands were like leftover crack, choking victim, like these really hardcore squatter punks that were like anti-corporate, really. They had a song. I don't know if we can curse on the show.
Yeah, please curse. They had I think it's great.
So they had a song called like Nazi White Trash Fuck Off. Like they were really crazy and like their shows were really kind of like kinetic and violent. Like I was really in a circle pitting. I had green hair. Like we used to just go. It was like Salt Lake City punk, like, you know, SOC punk, that movie, you know, like we used to go to Queens and I used to have a group of friends in Queens that were all like decked out with Trihawks, different color. We all had leather jackets. Wow. We'd go to the park to drink 40s around the fire in Queens and Forest Hills Park, you know? And then skinheads would like have beef with some of our more hardcore punk friends. It was just a crazy world.
Like this sounds like something you would make up.
We used to skateboard and climb fences and do graffiti and do all that stuff. And then I moved to Tennessee in the middle of high school.
And you were like, oh.
Wow.
Yeah. And so, like.
So some culture shock that gave you a lot of character.
True. I totally mellowed out. I got arrested twice for the first time in Tennessee. But after that, I think I got all that out of my system. I was really like rambunctious and really about like tearing shit up, you know. But then, you know, when I went to college, so I was in a punk band. I was like the lead singer, I would scream. It was like whatever. And I wrote the lyrics, but I kept writing lyrics even though I stopped playing guitar. And that's kind of what led me to poetry. I was always into hip hop as well. So like lately my influences are so vast. Like I listen to a lot of like current hip hop, but like closely to like just the way that they deliver the rhymes, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. There's something to be appreciated, even if it's not your thing. I feel like I've had a couple friends be like, well, listen to this, and you're listening, and you're like, there's more than just, like, whatever. There's more than just, like, rage or just, like, beat. Like, it's
the
beautiful
tempo,
thing when it, all these things come together. Like, even if that's not something that you choose to listen to, you have to be able to appreciate, like, what goes into it, for sure.
Yeah, because I think that there's, you know, if you look back in history, music and poetry was always kind of really linked, you know, like the Odyssey and the Iliad were really poems done to music, you know, like that would be memorized and like recited, you know, with a bard or like even a band.
And that's cool. I think that's valuable to have both because I feel like poets think that the only people who read their poems are other poets. Mm-hmm. And I think that in large cases true for this like generation in America, at least. I don't know any other point of reference, but I feel like poetry is not something that's like, it's not as accessible as music or
true
literature in general. Like, you know, books I think are easier to get, quote unquote, than poetry.
Yeah. I mean, for me, I it's hard for me sometimes to really dig into a poetry book. You got to sit with it for weeks sometimes with a collection of certain writers. You know, some of my favorite writers like Jack Kerouac, you know, and his collections of poetry. Charles Bukowski, you know, you can just like kind of pop in anywhere in the book. And it's kind of hard as a reader, especially if you're not interested, if you're not like a hardcore poetry reader, it's kind of hard to identify with a collection of short poems, you know, and really understand what it's about.
Yeah, and I've totally had instances of like skimming through a collection and I just start turning pages until something grabs me. But then there's sometimes that one poem that just like grabs you and you're like, I'm beyond words. Even though there's words on a page, like I'm beyond words in my response to this. So I think that's the power of poetry.
Definitely. You know, I mean, some of my favorite writers are like Ezra Pound and Amy Lowell, you know, the Imagism movement and like even Walt Whitman. It's just like the way that they use words to create images, you know. And I think for me, I actually read more fiction or nonfiction than I read poetry. I feel like that kind of because for my poetry is, while it's very lyrical, it's also more about like ideas and images and like different things. So I think it's you know, sometimes like if you're a poet, you don't necessarily read a lot, like have to read poetry, like be an expert in like whatever type of poetry to be a poet. I think for me it's more like it's just a form of expression that's almost obtuse. It's like it's hard to penetrate, but you can do a lot with in a small space.
Yeah, yeah. You guys have any thoughts, responses to that? Any of that? That was a lot.
I love stories of punks. That's my main story. And I was like busy being a riot girl in the West Coast at the same time.
Oh, wow.
and like a little separatist from the main punk scene. So I was just like, that's right. And I know people who definitely they're into poetry and spoken word was, I'm a punk. It's cool. Like that really awesome, like punk can do fuck it DIY attitude that brings so much really important sense of agency to people who then take it all kinds of ways. A lot of the people who I know who in the performance world were punks and had their band or did worked silk screening or doing other things, and then it just opens up that sense, I think, and that ethos is so important even now. And then like, what is it to take that into building a poetry community? So to me, they're so interconnected.
Nisa, any thoughts?
Oh, for me it was the Iliad and Odyssey. I think something a lot of people lose when they read through those is they're reading it.
Right.
And it's like, no, no, this is supposed to be spoken and performed.
It's oratory.
Yeah. So I always find, and you had brought that up, and I was just like, that is so true. And the same is true with a lot of poems, is when you just read it, it doesn't hit you the same way as when you say it out loud, because you get a beat and a life and music to it.
And there's a cadence, and I think Ezra Pound really mastered this, and then E.E. Cummings is what the poem we used as inspiration, of just creating breaks and beats and flow and like pause here. And Shakespeare wrote that in too. We talked about that on NASA's show about if you read it out loud, the words and the commas and the line breaks will tell you, and then, you know, consonants, we talked about like like repetitive sounds, like that's intentional to give you power or potency.
Yeah, exactly.
True.
Or the not having the exact opposite can usher in tears.
Yeah.
In the way that you're speaking it, if there aren't hard sounds to stop you, if you're just like letting it flow through, it's yeah.
That, I mean, that really inspires me, and it's also just the way things sound. Just like, for instance, you can listen to hip hop from another country and still vibe to it, or even, you know, I like listening to recordings of like Asian poetry, as well as even if you listen to classical Indian ragas and listen to the, because that's also poetry.
I think especially, I mean, in terms of like translation versus the original, like so much is lost in any translation of poetry. Oh, yeah. Like Rumi, I'm sure it's brilliant.
True.
In the original format, if you could understand it, like,
but even if you don't understand it, that's what I'm trying to say, is that you can still
feel
something from the recitation of words, you know, especially if it's in like kind of like that almost mystical level of like when someone's really in the zone, especially in like religious music, like even Gregorian chant music.
Totally.
Like, because there's a cadence and there's a repetition, and that creates an atmosphere.
And I think it speaks to humanness. I mean, sound is vibration. But I remember, I recall last year around this time, I went to a Jewish celebration, and just like sitting there making sounds with people, even though I had no idea, like was just like powerful.
True.
I saw you grab your notebook. Did you have any poetry you wanted to share with us?
I pulled out a bunch of poems on the way over here on the bus, thinking maybe I could read a few.
Yeah, read a few, please.
All right. So, again, I'm Word Up Poet. You can find most of these on my Instagram. And I'm recording an album of some of this poetry. I'm just experimenting with a lot of different things. But so I have, like, a lot of short poems that I put, like, for Instagram. And I'm going to read, like, them. I'm going to kind of connect them.
Maybe.
I love that you use Instagram to get text-based workout. I think that's so cool.
Yeah, definitely. It actually motivated me to get back into writing, because I used to write all the time for open mics that I used to host. And then when I stopped doing that, I kind of had less of a urgency to write. And then when I created this Instagram account, I just got like, you know, it was really cool, because there's a huge writing community on Instagram, you know, and you can get really inspired by so many different writers. So here's a few right here. Tell me why we met again. Without hesitation, fulfilling the anticipated end, I lost myself looking into your sentences. A truthfulness found within. Wait for the moment to sink in. It'll hit you once it begins. Disappear and become my best friend. Letters sent across oceans of mistaken promises. Let go and jump off the balcony into the mist. Embrace whichever reflection you find most promising. Embody the body eclectic as it rejects pridefulness. Repossess pages cherry-picked off the edges of a cliff. Glowing sages exchanging gifts shaken from their wits. Just breathe and force yourself to exist. On winding roads. forever curving down a narrow valley turn and try to look back into the eyes of your former self. Savor the uncanny feeling they gave you for free and try to remember where you were when you lost it. I want to meet you on that street all those years ago, with the flickering lamp and steady rain that covered our umbrella, eyes like infinity pools overflowing eternity. It isn't what it ended up to be, isn't what we wanted to begin with, isn't is a hiccup in the middle of apologies. Release your clenched breath, release the death you wanted to see, release and be free, reclaim the need to be everything and expand cross-dimensionally. Weird. So those two put together.
Bravo. We should have used your poems for a free write.
I got two other ones if we have time. I don't know.
Sure. Well, I want to talk to you.
Yeah. Can we do that again?
And then we can maybe.
Yeah.
So how do you know when you're done?
That's really hard. You know, and that's actually something that I'm really obsessed with thinking about, but could never figure out. I don't know if you guys ever think about that.
I think
that.
It's like painting. You're like, I just stop touching it, I think, is when I'm done.
Well, for me, it's like more like the question of where is it even coming from, or how did I even write that? Like, sometimes I read back on my old stuff and I don't know. I couldn't recreate the way that I wrote that. If I had lost the actual file or the paper, I'd never be able to do that again. And so for me, when I write these short poems, like the two I just read, I wrote them like in a sitting, and I've never edited them. They just come out exactly like that. With the punctuation, it's like, because when I, like, as I was writing the free write, you know, I usually just, I'll go back, like, as I get to the end of a line, I'll go and read over it again quickly to somehow reach the next line. That's kind of how I get it. But then somehow, you know what I like to do is kind of end on a half note of a, like, sometimes the ends of my poems kind of just end abruptly.
The lines are shorter. I've noticed from the few poems I've heard from you, and I think that the auditory piece adds this element, it adds definition and shape and emotion.
Yeah, and that you can't get in just reading it.
Yeah,
it's not the same thing.
And so when I read it out loud, you can get it a little bit better, but listening to you recite it is just like, it almost ends like mid-breath.
Yeah.
And I like that.
It's like a cliffhanger. It's just because it's like almost – because honestly, too, when I get to that last line, it's usually like I have nothing left to say. Or I just – literally a lot of time lately, it's like I only have so much time to write, and it's like on the train in between places. Mm-hmm. So it'll be like a 40-minute train ride. By the end of that train ride, I'm like, I got to get up and done.
That's your jam.
Yeah. And so I've usually by after 30 minutes – and so, you know, after like 30 minutes of writing and you're going over a short piece over and over again, then you kind of get like – you hit a wall, and that's kind of how my poems end. Like, they just kind of stop. But at the same time...
Subway stop. I'm just kidding.
But at the same time, I try to make them, like, end on some, like, somehow sum up or...
Great.
You know.
And you had another one you wanted to share?
Yeah, I don't know. Sure.
I think we'd all be happy to hear it.
I don't want
to
hog it up. Yeah. So these two are, like, Brooklyn. Like, so a lot of the times, I really like a lot of sad love poetry, and then... Since I'm
Who
always
doesn't?
On the subway.
Seriously.
Yeah, that's like definitely one of my specialties. I like writing.
I love poetry about being lonely.
Yeah.
I think if I look back at all the poems I've memorized, I'm like, the theme is loneliness.
One of my favorite things.
But I love it.
You know how Edgar Allan Poe was famous? He wrote that famous essay about the raven. Do you know anything about that?
And no.
One of the things he said about poetry is that one of the most beautiful things or emotions is like the emotion of unrequited love. You know, because like all his poetry is
so
like Annabelle,
painful.
This woman that he lost.
Right.
So.
Oh, God, being human.
So I like that. I mean, I try to channel that. I think any good writer has a lot of like sadness and darkness and try to put that
and
in there.
You have to channel. Otherwise, it destroys
but my
you.
My other big influence is just New York, you know, the street. And since I'm so into hip hop, sometimes it gets more like street, like hip hop's kind of whatever. Mm-hmm. So this one kind of mixes that up. So it's like. I'll meet you in the depths of your Brooklyn as the sun warms the dew of the morning. Sequencing streets like a movie, my alleys will bend round the corners to announce the glory of your five stories, each brick a lesson, stacked in a red-maroon tension, piled high to hide the past from its yearning. We'll sit together under gaping awnings, waiting for a future to remember, coughing from the fumes of the city's burning and thanking the sidewalk for its service, connecting our two worlds. You are the flower growing between the street urchins. I am the pollen that seeps below the tracks. You are the present I look for this moment. I am awareness, a positive nothingness without a mask. My heart, thick as the forest, Each step bleeds red like sirens on Bedford. To walk is the surest way to the foundation where knowledge is patience and sight. Walking through eternal night east of the morning, on top of the ground, taking flight from assumption, you inevitably come across chance who might, if you're lucky, introduce fate. In Beehive, Brooklyn, turn on avenues of and dodge sirens of yeshiva destruction. Dynamic disaster scenes, fire ambulant dreams, sequence past 30 feet. As a spectator, pedestrian life, Brooklyn universe chants on a concrete stage erupting with the fall leaves, wind-like astronomy, atmospheric Bada Vista, on the highway of kings, reciting our hymns for the cloud to sing. Across vistas of hard gray and beige, reverberating machinations of every kind, like Avenue Q, the price of bagels, diagonal rays of light with Flatbush drawing near us, and everything like anything can come to mind at any time to hear us. Word up.
Nice.
Yeah.
Cool.
I enjoyed the rhythm of that.
Yeah, it's very, that last part was really inspired by, like, the beats, you know. I really, like, sometimes, like, I really want to write, like, long, just dense poetry that just goes on and on and on. Like, sometimes, like, my favorite passages of Kerouac's novels, like, they just, it just, you know, it's shocking. Sometimes you read, like, Desolation Angels, and his, and the pages will just go on without any paragraph breaks for, like, 10 pages, and yeah, just and on, like, and on and on like that. That's, yeah,
that's
the best.
That's, The Road, Cormac McCarthy, apparently, does that,
yeah,
to create emphasis. And like I feel like someone was telling me about this, so it's, this is all hearsay, but in the road Blood Meridian, in Blood Meridian there's like basically a paragraph that's all one sentence because it's this like intense epic battle and there's like no pauses, like everything in the book has been leading up to this.
Yeah.
And I was just like, ooh, I don't know, man. It's a lot.
I love things like that. One of my favorite songs from the Decemberists is a cautionary song, I want to say is what it's called. Cautionary song.
Yeah.
And it lulls you into it with its rhythm. Dun, 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 dun. And then,
right.
And so like the first few times I listened to it, I was like, oh, this is a nice song. And then you actually hear the words and it hits you.
Right.
Like it's a really kind of twisted thing. And I feel like that's a lot of that same rhythm that I found in your poetry.
Cool, thanks. It's like spinning a web, I guess.
Exactly. So that people get like kind of lulled in, but once you actually listen to it, you're like, whoa.
Yeah.
The sound, you know. That's why it's like that's why I like spoken word, and that's why sometimes like, you know, I like slam poetry and the energy of it, but also I feel like sometimes it's just a little misdirected and not as creative as it could be.
Mm.
A lot of people are just trying to like sound like somebody else or whatever.
Mm-hmm. But and you have to mimic before you find your own voice.
That's
definitely
true.
A part of the creative process, but some people just get stuck in mimicking.
Yeah.
Well, let me break to say something that I'm supposed to read on the mic. If you're just tuning in, this is Ink and Worm, All Things Reading and Writing on Radio Free Brooklyn. And there's going to be occasion Zedco dance hall bands, jambalaya supper, jamming and dancing are just a few of the great things in store for you at the Bayou and Brooklyn Music Festival, which kicks off on Friday, May 13th at 8 p.m. and continues until Sunday, May 15th at 10 p.m. at the fabulous Jalopy. Thanks,
Jalopy,
guys.
Jalopy is great.
Jalopy Music Theater in Red Hook, Brooklyn. Don't miss the amazing Louisiana Proud lineup, including Courtney Grainer, Blake Miller, Jesse Lange, Bayou Brew, Cesbon, Zinco, Revelators, and Black Rock, Zinco, and the Saints. Obviously, I don't know who those people are, but that sounds fun, right?
That sounds like a lot of fun.
I might be
totally
there. Yeah, I think we should all go.
I think
Zydeco.
Anything at the Jalopy is also great. They just program really brilliantly.
There you go.
Plus, I'm a huge fan of Louisiana-style cooking.
Oh.
Definitely, yes.
So beautiful.
Oh.
It's proof that there's God, or maybe proof that...
Jambalaya.
It's proof of something. Who knows?
It's proof of something greater than us.
Just like, you put that in your mouth, and you're like, yeah. I'm done.
Like, yes.
Cool. So I like to end my shows with rapid fire, and we're actually getting near the end of my show. So, ta-da, guys ready?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
What book have you not gotten around to reading? I'll go first. I've had this library book that I've seriously renewed over 20 times because they keep letting me. It's the biography of Abramovich?
Marina Abramovich.
Yeah, yeah. It's her biography. She's incredible. Her biography is incredible. I cannot get through it. I don't know what my problem is. I'm like so fascinated by her, and yet this book's just sitting there. Just sitting there.
As They Lay Dying by Faulkner. Mm-hmm. I never really read it in class. Like, I tried to several times, like, but it was
Cliff
so
notes.
Tedious.
Here we go.
Yeah, it just got, it's so dense and, you know. That's I do
fair,
like Faulkner, but like I didn't read, I never got to finish that book, or I never allowed myself to clench my teeth through it.
Is it Between the World and Me by Ta-Nehisi Coates? I don't remember exactly what it's called. It's like this long essay to his son about being a black man in America. It's just
sounds
on my list.
Should read it. I haven't gotten to it yet.
It's on the list. It's supposed to be amazing.
Yeah,
and I just have
sounds
to.
Sounds cool.
I'm like number 975 on the Brooklyn Library Holds list. It's something like that. It's one of those. Like,
it's one of those books. It's the unicorn of books or something.
For me, I just saw a play, and I'm not 100% sure if this is the right. This always happens to me. If this is the right name for it, I think it's Misalliance by Shaw, and it was.
You just saw it?
Yeah, I just saw it at NYU grad acting. It was an amazing production. So shout out to all the second years. You guys were amazing. But I just saw that, and there was a monologue done by one of the characters that I was like, I want that. So I checked the book out so that I could learn this monologue about working a 9-to-5 job. It's originally a man's monologue, but I want it anyway. Mm-hmm. And I've had the book for 2 weeks now, and I have not read it or looked at it once.
Yeah. Well, and now we can all be accountable maybe and at some level. Or it just continues to sit there and you're just not ready for it.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe not this lifetime. In honor of Mother's Day, is there a book you remember your mother reading to you as a child? My mom always read this version of The Little Mermaid that was like true, not the Disney version, like the real version where she like can't commit murder and therefore dies herself. And you're like, that's noble and a better ending. And it was beautiful. I always just like, I can see the images now. The illustrations were just really impactful for me. And she was brown haired, so it wasn't even like, I have red hair, so it's not even that I was like, redhead power. It was like, no, this story.
I have two. My mom was once Catholic, and I am in fact named after Saint Agnes. Nessa is Greek for Agnes. I am not Greek, my name is. But she would read the story of Saint Agnes to me all the time, which is, she is the virgin saint. Not like the saint of virgins, but like she's just, her thing is that she wouldn't have sex with a pagan king. And my mom named me after her in hopes that it would keep me pure.
That you wouldn't have sex with a pagan king.
Oh, well, to be fair.
But I think that this is funny because you also like, I mean, can I say this?
Yeah, yeah.
You like deflowering men.
I do.
You're like.
I do.
So no, the irony is really wonderful.
The peak of the irony is that she did it so that I wouldn't be loose like she is. Mom, I love you.
Happy Mother's Day.
But the second one that is also actually along the same thing. My mom read a lot of accidentally Christian books to me. Was Narnia. She's the reason I got into the
that
Narnia
That is a
series.
Good story.
It really
it's
is.
A good story.
And she never made it past the first book.
I remember learning it was Christian, and I was just taken totally aback. It hadn't occurred to me because I am Jewish and I grew up Jewish, and I missed the Jesus part.
Or like the antithesis, which was the Golden Compass. And if you don't know that that's about religion, it's just all these other things.
It really sucker punches you at the end of that. At the end, I read those so over the summer. I was working by Barnes & Noble.
That was a sucker punch. I was just like, what?
And I was just like, yes, 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 yes. Holy
I know.
Fuck.
No,
what did you just do to this?
The whole series, you're like, yeah. And then you're just like, there's no reason to go on. What?
No.
Why?
Radio
no,
world.
This cannot be. Like, I reject.
Well, I got super into J.R.R. Tolkien over like a, not, yes, right, yes, that's, no, wrong
the
one.
The Hobbit?
Wrong one. I got into J.R.R. Tolkien, but also C.S. Lewis. They were friends. This is why that confuses my head.
Yeah, he converted J.R.
Yes.
Or the other way around. J.R.R. converted C.S. Lewis. It's one of the ways. One of them converted the other
but
to Christianity.
C.S. Lewis was dealing with a lot of stuff. When when he was writing that, as well as other things, just like death and whatever. And so you can see it, and why that's such a Christian overtone is because of his dealing with like religion and morality and
That's legit. And even if you're not Christian, the things that he's written about relationship with deity are really potent and powerful and beautiful.
Yeah.
How about you, Dean?
One of my favorite books my mom used to read to me, first of all, would be a toss-up between Dr. Seuss's Walk It in My Pocket, which was really my favorite Dr. Seuss, because, you know, he really was in his prime there, I think, you know, all the characters that he created with the silly rhymes. Mm-hmm. But also, there was another book called I'm Not Gonna Get Up Today. It was about this little kid that just would not get out of bed today. And every line, it was just like the whole town was trying to get him out of bed. His mom couldn't get him out of bed. He didn't want to go to school. And his mom, it's just like this really silly, but like, you know, like delinquent little kid. And I don't know, he was like, it was just the most, I've never seen any other children's book where it just kind of like, the kid, there's no moral to this story. Like he just cut school and like, but like, it's like funny.
Yeah. Did you have one?
I remember when I was a kid, my mom, the story as she tells it is that she would copy me books from the library, so I'd have books, which I love. It's the sweetest story. And the one I remember was Angelina Ballerina, which is like this little story about a little mouse who wants to be a ballerina, but she's not very good, but she practices, but then she's sick on the recital. I don't know if it's as harrowing as I remember it being, but it was just I just remember having these photocopy pages, just loving them and coloring them in. Ooh. And I know.
Those are my favorite, were black and white pictures, because then I got to color them. Mm-hmm. And I was like, score, this is how you make books. So next week, actually, we're having Call Me Ishmael is coming on. And so I would love to play a clip about a book that someone sent in to them. Their whole beef is call in, leave a voicemail about a book you love. Maybe. Maybe not. Maybe not. It's like, mic's not working. Didn't check that one out. Cool. So they're coming on next week. And that's really exciting. And now we're going to skip that part because I don't want to mess with the audio. And we'll do that another time. So also, fun thing, check out their database. It's really extraordinary and touching listening to people talk about books they love. And then also call in and share your own stories for other people to share and enjoy. Yeah. How about you guys? Anything you want to plug coming up in the near future? Shows, events, holidays?
Well, I would love to plug my upcoming Radio Free Brooklyn show.
Yes, we forgot that in all the chaos.
The NYPD just ruins everything. But I do have a show starting May 16th with the start of season 3. I will be hosting The World is a Terrible Place, a weekly news magazine, Mondays from 12 to 1, the perfect lunch break, as you don't actually get to take a lunch break as you're sitting at your computer or wherever else you sit all day.
Working hard,
or you know, if you need a moment to escape,
or hardly working.
Oh, exactly.
But listening to Radio Free Brooklyn on the sly.
Exactly. Streaming that at radiofreebrooklyn.com.org. I guess I'll learn that by the 16th. But we will be weekly, Mondays 12 to 1. Bringing you the very best and the very worst around the world. And it's super exciting. So as the station gets to season 3, it's fun to get to.
What day does season 3 start?
The 16th.
The 16th.
Maybe the 15th or the 16th. I'm not sure.
Monday.
It's Monday.
The 16th.
So Monday.
So we'll be right there at the beginning.
Huzzah. NASA's going to start being my co-host. That'll be fun.
Oh, that's awesome.
Dean, how about you? Any plugs?
Just check me out on all those social medias.
All
Instagram, wordup.poet, Snapchat, wordup.poet, SoundCloud, wordup.poet, Facebook, wordup.poet. Check me out. I'm going to be putting out a lot of recordings and self-publishing some books coming up soon, so you can find me on all those different platforms.
Cool. And I'm on all the socials as well, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, Stitcher. You can listen on Stitcher, iTunes, Audio Boom. If you have listened or if you are listening and you want to post a review, that'd be really awesome. And you can like tell us what you like and what you didn't like and why.
Hmm.
Yeah. What do you guys think? We're okay?
Yeah.
We're okay.
I'm having fun, so I have to keep revisiting. Like, that's really the only thing that matters. Cool. Empty Orchestra is next, exploring the dynamic relationship between song and singer in the context of karaoke with Angelica and Amanda. And I'll leave you with a word, take it or leave it. Nyatni.
once again, back to the seasons of my youth. I recall a box of rags that someone gave us, and how my mama put the rags to use. There were rags of many colors, but every piece was small, and I didn't have a coat, and it was way down in the fall. Mama sewed the rags together, so in every piece with love, she made my coat of many colors that I was so proud of. As she sewed, she told a story from the Bible she had read about a coat of many colors Joseph wore, and then she said, perhaps this coat will bring you good luck and happiness. And I just couldn't wait to wear it, and Mama blessed it with a kiss. My coat of many colors that my mama made for me, made only from rags, but I wore it so proudly. Although we had no money, well, I was rich as I could be. In my coat of many colors my mama made for me. So with patches on my breeches and holes in both my shoes, in my coat of many colors I hurried off to school, just to find the others laughing and making fun of me. In my coat of many colors my mama made for me. And oh, I couldn't understand it, for I felt I was rich, and I told them all the love my mama sewed in every stitch, and I told them all the story mama told me while she sewed, and how